We're doing this influenza problem, and I'll sort of remind you what it is. We're trying to optimize the treatment rate during an influenza pandemic. So we want to know the rate of people that we should be treating at a particular time to, well, to be optimal overall. And what do we mean by that? Well, at first, right now, we mean minimizing the total number of deaths. There are a number of other objectives that you could have. You could try to minimize the total number of people who are infected, or you could also try and reduce the spread of the resistant strain. So by that we mean the strain of the virus that's resistant to your treatment. Okay, so that's what we're trying to do. So how do we do it? Well, originally we had this model, and we've improved this model, and I guess there's not really much I can say about this, so I'll show you the new model, which looks like this. Right. So I guess I'll tell you what all the variables are here. So that S up there, that's the population of people who are susceptible to the influenza virus. The IU up here is the number of people who've been infected with the influenza virus and haven't been treated yet. So IUR is the same thing, people who've been infected, people who haven't been treated, but they've been infected with the drug-resistant strain. Okay. So IT is the people who've been infected, but they've been treated. ITR is people who've been infected, treated, but they were infected with the resistant strain. R is the number of people who've been infected but then gone on to recover. And D is the people who've been infected but then gone on to die. And P down here, I guess, is different than our other variables. So our other variables are all subsets of our population. P is actually our total supply of drugs. Okay, so how do these interact? How do these evolve over time? Well, S, what can happen to a susceptible person? The only thing that can happen is they can become infected. And I guess they can either become infected with a sensitive strain, so a strain that's not resistant, or they can become infected with a resistant strain. And so that equation sort of governs that. Right, so an infected, untreated person. Well, how does that evolve over time? Well, people who are susceptible, as I already said, can become infected. So that's one thing. You can choose to treat the people who are infected and untreated, and so that moves them down to IT here. And then, well, they can recover or they can die. Right, so IUR, it's basically the same. If you're susceptible, you can become infected with a resistant strain. You can be treated once you're already infected, or you can recover, or you can die. Okay, so people who've been treated. Well, people who were infected and untreated can become treated, right? And that's our treatment rate, P, and that's going to be our control parameter. And then what else can happen? Well, people can die, people can recover, but people who've been treated can also develop the resistant strain. So this is how this resistant strain comes into existence. People who are treated, the virus develops a resistance to the antiviral drugs. And so then they flow into this class, people who've been treated but are infected with the resistant strain. Right. So, okay. People who are treated and have the resistant strain, well, they come from the place I just said, people who are treated with, treated and infected with the sensitive strain. They can come from people who were infected and untreated with the resistant strain, and then we treat them. So this is a waste of drugs. We actually don't know that these people are infected with a resistant strain. We just know that they're infected. So we go ahead and treat them anyway and move them into this class. But that doesn't help them any. So this is just a waste of drugs. And then, of course, people can recover and people can die like before. Right, so the recovered class, people flow into it from all these infected classes at various rates. People in any one of these classes can recover. And similarly, people in any one of these classes can die. Okay, so what happens to our drug supply? Well, the rate of change of our drug supply is negative the treatment rate times people who are infected but untreated, and that's both infected, untreated with the sensitive strain and with the resistant strain. Again, because we don't actually know they're infected with the resistant strain, so you're going to treat them anyway. Okay. Right. So what are we trying to do? Well, originally we're trying to minimize the total number of deaths. So that's the integral of the death rate over time. But sort of yesterday we came up with this idea that maybe we shouldn't actually be trying to minimize that. We should be trying to minimize that plus this parameter here. The reason for that is we're going to try and tackle this problem with some optimal control methods. And it turns out to be much easier to do if you have this extra factor in your objective function. Okay, so another reason to do this is other people in similar situations have sort of seemed to do something similar. But what does this extra factor really mean? Well, if we just had P up here instead of P squared, this would be like the total number of drugs that we're using. So it makes sense that we'd want to minimize that. So we actually have P squared, and that's important for solving the problem, for using optimal control. But then it's not really the number of drugs we're using. So it's something that's sort of like the amount of drugs that we're using, and it's convenient for solving the problem. Okay, so these are all the equations that you saw on the last slide. Now we're trying to minimize this thing up here subject to these constraints. So initially we're going to say we have a limited supply of drugs. So remember, capital P was our drug supply, so initially we have some limited supply of drugs, capital delta. At the end, we want to have positive drugs left over, right? We don't want to have a negative supply of drugs at the end. That doesn't make sense. So we're enforcing P at T, which is the time at the end of the pandemic. We're enforcing that has to be positive. And our treatment rate also has to be positive. I mean, it doesn't make sense to have a negative treatment rate. Okay. Right, so we try to solve this using optimal control, and there's a couple people in the audience who helped us quite a lot with this. But so basically what we do is we define this Hamiltonian here. And to define the Hamiltonian, we have to define these new variables, lambda. So basically our Hamiltonian is, all these lambdas times all these state variables that were in our original equations. So you see we have the derivatives of those. We're actually going to substitute what we have in our original equation for that. And then we have this objective function down here. Right. And so the way to solve this is we have to solve these equations. Lambda I dot is negative dh by dxi. And so this is just, we're changing the notation here a little bit. The xi's are actually these variables, so these sets of the population. And we also have this dhdp equals zero term, or this equation. And so the strategy here is we're going to solve this last equation and get an expression for p. Then we're going to substitute that into both these equations for the lambdas and our original set of ODEs that you saw earlier. And then we're going to try and solve these, right? So we've eliminated P, we're going to solve this new system, and then we can say what P is as a function of lambda and X. Okay, so this is why we had to add this extra term to the Hamiltonian, or to the objective function, because our Hamiltonian here is linear in P, except we have this P squared term, right? So this equation, P would not show up unless we had this P squared term, and we actually want to solve this equation and get an expression for P. So that's why we had this extra little term. Okay. Right, so how are we actually going to solve this now? Well, we have these x's, which are our state variables, and we have differential equations for those. And we also have a system of differential equations for the lambdas, which are co-state variables. Right, so to solve this problem, we have a bit of a difficulty. So X was like our subsets of the population, right? So we have initial conditions on those. We can say initially we have so many susceptible people and a few infected. Lambda is our co-state variables, and we actually have final conditions on those. We say lambda I at the end of the pandemic is zero for all I. So this is going to be a little bit problematic to solve. And the way we get around that is we're essentially going to assume a value for lambda, so assume lambda is some function. Then we're going to start over here and just substitute that function into our ODEs for x. Now we have initial conditions for x. We have x ODEs for x with actual values put in for lambda. So we can solve these, right? All right, so we do that, and Once we've done that, we get solutions for x, right? Okay, so now we have solutions for x. We can plug those into our equations for lambda. We have final conditions for lambda, so we can solve these, right? And we move backwards. Okay, so we've solved the second set of equations. Now we put that those lambdas back into our x's, and we do the first thing we did again. Okay, so we keep doing this process and getting new and better x's and lambdas each time. And hopefully this is going to converge. People who know about optimal control sort of say this is going to converge. So we call this the ping pong method because it sort of bounces back and forth. Okay, so what actually happens when we try to do this? Okay, so we started with a system, and we started with some initial conditions. So we said we have a susceptible population of 1,000 people, and we have 10 infected people, and these are people who haven't been treated yet, because this is right at the beginning. All our other infected classes are zero, our recovered class is zero, our dead class is zero, and how much drugs do we have? Well, we say we have 100 courses of drugs. So we basically have enough drugs to treat 10% of the population. Right. Okay, so what happens? All right, so here we have, the blue is the stock of drugs, that was capital P. So essentially what happens with blue? Well, we treat with our drugs. We start off with 100, eventually we run out, right? So then we enforce our condition that P of T has to be positive, and we just truncate and make this zero. Okay, so our other line here is actually our treatment rate P. Well, it's not actually the treatment rate P, it's been rescaled so it fits on the same graph. Okay, so what happens? Well, initially we have an infection, right? So we have a very high treatment rate. So the program wants to treat everybody and just eliminate that infection. But it quickly figures out that it can't do that because the infection is going to get out of hand and resistant strains are going to develop, and then the treatment's useless against those. Okay, so to try and not have as many resistant strains, we drop the treatment rate really quickly, and so that's what happens right here. Okay, then it gradually increases, right? Because if you're not treating a lot of people, the virus, I mean, people just keep becoming infected. And so then, okay, on the one hand, you don't want to develop this resistant strain, but on the other hand, all these people are becoming infected. So to control the overall epidemic, it becomes optimal to treat more and more and more. Okay, so this sort of makes good sense up until this point where we've artificially truncated this supply of drugs. So, and then you have this big funny thing. Okay, so obviously that's not actually what happens. I mean, what actually happens when we run out of drugs is our treatment rate goes to zero. But what does the program actually try to do? And this is kind of interesting. So when our treatment rate goes to zero, all the IU, all the infected, untreated people, what happens to them? Well, they don't get treated. So that class builds up and becomes really big, right? And so then, okay, well then, so you have all these untreated people. All of a sudden, you want to treat these people to control the epidemic, right? So then your treatment rate has to jump up like this. And then it sort of reduces as the epidemic runs out. But of course, this isn't actually what's happening. This is what we'd want to do if we had drugs. But we've run out of drugs. Okay, so what happens with our other variables? Well, this is the same problem, and now we're looking at our subsets of the population here. So for example, S is the susceptible people. All right, we start out with lots of susceptible people. Some of them get the disease, and then at the end you can see the epidemic's over here because S stabilizes. So people get the disease, and I guess a certain number of people never get the disease, and that's the value that it stabilizes to. You also have this recovered class here. So initially there's no recovered people. People get the disease and then they recover. Okay, and then at the end this stabilizes because no more people are getting the disease. And then you've got some other behavior in here. So if we zoom in on that, what do we have? Well, for example, red here is infected and treated. So you see, that's going to go up gradually, but then at a certain point, and this is the point where we run out of drugs, so we're not treating any more people here, So once we stop treating people, this infected treated falls off to zero, right? And similarly, this green line here is the infected untreated people. And once we stop treating people, that gets big, right? So that's why we have that peak. Okay, so this is essentially the same thing, except now we're going to see what happens if we don't run out of drugs. So we're going to start with a sufficient supply of drugs. And it turns out that 25% is sufficient. So that's 250 courses, enough to treat 250 people out of a population of 1,000. Right. So what happens to our stock of drugs? Well, it's similar to before. It falls off, except it never hits zero, so we never artificially truncate it. So we just let it fall off like this, and then it stabilizes here. When the epidemic's over, we don't have to use any more drugs. And our treatment rate, so again, our treatment rate's rescaled, but the shape of it is this. I mean, it's the same as before, except we never, I mean, somewhere around here before, we had this big, giant peak, which is where we ran out of drugs, right? So that doesn't actually happen this time. Our treatment rate comes up. It sort of stays up until around here where the epidemic's really ending, and then our treatment rate just falls off to zero. So this actually should be an optimal treatment rate for this problem. Okay, so, right, the epidemic profile, right, so I guess one difference here is our susceptible people doesn't fall as much at the end, right? So we have more susceptible people at the end, which means less people have been infected. And similarly, we have less recovered people, which means less people have been infected and then recovered. Right, so, I mean, that makes sense. We have more drugs available, right? So we've done a better job of controlling the epidemic. Right, and if we zoom in here, we don't get this funny behavior with IT now. So remember last time we had IT all of a sudden falls off when you stop treating. Right, this doesn't happen here. IT just has a nice peak. It's the red curve here. And similarly, IU just has a nice smooth peak. And that's the green curve. All right, conclusion. Okay, so what have we done? We've developed a model for the spread of the disease. I think this is really the main thing we've done. I mean, we talked a lot about this model. We've revised it a lot of times, and I think our model is really pretty good now. Right. So we've determined the optimal treatment rate to minimize death, I guess, in two different cases, right? So I mean, we had the one case where we only had enough drugs to treat 10% of the people, and we had the other case where we had enough drugs to treat 25% of the people, and we've found an optimal treatment rate for those two cases. Right. Okay, so that's what we've done. What are some other things we might want to look at? Well, we might want to change the objective. Maybe we don't just want to minimize death. Maybe we want to minimize the total number of infections, or, you know, somehow minimize the number of people who get infected with the resistant strain as well. So that's another thing to look at. And also, maybe if we could find a way to get rid of this epsilon p squared term in the objective, that's something else we could do. Right, include more parameters, I mean, more things going on in our model. We could always do that. Revise the constraints. So, I mean, maybe if we're looking at a different objective, we want some different constraints. And we also want to do some sensitivity analysis. So how sensitive is this to our initial conditions? How sensitive is this behavior to our supply of drugs, or the number of people who are initially infected? How sensitive is it to this epsilon that we had in here? And I guess there's also all these parameters like death rate and recovery rate and stuff that we had. All right, so I think that's all. Thanks.
So is there any questions? Okay, Joe, just a quick few questions. Let me get close to, let's do David first.
So this is a lovely job, this great job you guys did. That's really, really nice. I have two questions.
Sure.
The first is, in the case where you had lots of drugs,
right,
you didn't use them up.
Right, that's a good point. The
Why?
Optimal thing isn't to use all the drugs in that case.
But yeah. Some people died.
Yes.
I hate to sound like a bleeding heart. but some people died, and you just said, oh, well, screw them.
So what we're saying is if we'd used all our drugs, more people would have died. Because we would have developed more resistant strain, right? When we use drugs, we treat people, and more viruses become resistant. And then we can't control that. We can't treat those, right? So if we have a lot of resistant strain, I mean, a lot of more people are going to catch that. We can't treat it, so more people are going to die that way.
I would, my first guess, if I looked at this, would be, while I hear your explanation,
yeah.
My first guess would be to look at the epsilon p squared term and so on, and see if you aren't
that
focusing a little hard on that
well.
And not enough on the actual
yeah.
death of humans.
Yeah.
my other question was about this initial treatment. Initially, you have this
right.
sort of green graph that had a high treatment initially that fell off quickly
yeah.
and then slowly rose.
Right.
And
right.
I was wondering if you'd run through your explanation again for that initial drop-off. I ask because your explanation, if I remember correctly, was that somehow the control thinks it's going to kill the infection off, but then
right.
realizes that it doesn't.
Right.
But since your control problem should be integrated over the whole time,
yeah.
that doesn't sound like a good explanation to me.
Sorry, the green line. The green line is your treatment rate. So it's the rate at which you're treating infected people. It's that, but it's also a rate, right? It's got time units, inverse time units, right? It's how fast are you treating these people too? To which parameters? To the variable?
FIUR.
Well, it's like the rate of change of P, right? The rate of change of the drugs you have is like your rate multiplied by your, sorry? This guy here, maybe. That equation here. This one's the right equation. So this is like little p, right?
So perhaps we could allow the speaker to answer the question.
Okay. So I think you're asking what little p is in terms of all the other things, right? So little p is big P dot divided by IU plus IUR.
My question is, one of the assumptions in the whole scheme of things is that your parameters are constant. Now, I can imagine situations that, say it had geography in it, where people,
right.
The parameters may change depending on circumstance, and so as the density of infections are low, the parameters may change compared to high levels of density of infection where the parameters may be different. So how would you deal with that
kind
of scenario?
You mean like parameters like this death rate and this recovery rate?
Yeah, betas and
yeah.
all that stuff.
I mean, possibly they could be. I mean, they could be changing the model. So
yeah,
I don't know. Do you have more?
I think for the diseases like HIV kind of diseases, which last for a long time, 10, 12 years, that might have a big impact, but if we are looking for the surge epidemic infection,
right.
there might not be that much change in those parameters. Approximately,
yeah.
we might have a concept.
There's going to be some sort of allowance for the course of infection relative to the rate, the unit to which you're measuring the parameters, right? So
That's definitely true. If we are looking, the question, of course, every day, every second, that those parameters, those things are changing. The only thing is that if we are looking for the particular for the short time of infection, how much might be the effect? That's the thing. So as we are looking for the short time of infection, particularly for influenza, it doesn't have that much role. Maybe Syed knows better explanation for that.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the organizer and also the group that works on this problem. Well, a couple of things. Number one is P is the rate at which infected individuals are treated. So over time, P would change because infected individuals would change with time and dynamics is different. So That's number one. Your question is related to changing parameters, for example, beta. Well, obviously, beta would change. It depends on several factors. Number one is how contagious the virus is. The production number of the virus would dramatically change beta. Second is the structure of the population. Well, we're looking at the deterministic model. It assumes homogeneous interaction. Okay, it assumes that one infected individual on average has got interaction with almost every individual in the population, and transmission rate is exactly the same for every single infected case in the population. So if you look at the problem in heterogeneous population, it's, in terms of quantification, it's vastly different. And we're actually experiencing that part by developing network models. In terms of beta, you have to look at the reproduction number of the virus. What I suggested to do here is that because we know that some range of parameters, like reproduction number of previous pandemics, we have some range for those numbers. So we assume that, I think what they assume is reproduction number is 1.8 or 2, which is sort of in the range of 1918 pandemic. And based on that, you can easily find transmission rate of the virus in a homogeneous population. It's still not quite accurate in heterogeneous population. It depends on type of interaction, it depends on clustering point, number of neighbors, and how and the distance between individuals. So it depends on that. And one of the things that in the conclusion, you see that variation in the parameters, that's sensitivity analysis, to see if you change those parameters, what is the effect. But overall, even if you change the model, you probably come up with some other results that in terms of numbers and quantifications are probably different. Exactly. That's part of the sensitivity analysis. You have to change parameters. Whether it's beta or, you put it in a range, and see how the result would be different. Okay, this question, or I can make a couple of comments.
Yes,
can you go back to your picture, which has the amount of drug going to zero? Yeah, so if I've just written down the thing right, the green line is plotting little p, is that right?
Yes.
So little p is proportional to p dot, and p dot is naught after 30, so why is the green line not zero?
So it's not really what's happening, it's what comes out of the program. I mean, of course, at this point, we actually aren't treating anybody, so little p is actually zero. But this is sort of what it would want to do if you had drugs available.
Well, it's not, because if you have drugs available, that changes the green line, as you see in the two or three slides time.
Right, but I mean, if we had drugs available, but you are also having the influences of not having drugs available,
so
zero.
Here you've run out, but suppose that, for example, drugs were to start trickling in because you managed to produce them. That's the rate at which you would want to treat. Of course, the P that we get there is the P that we get by solving die H over die P equal to zero. And here, to compute that green line in the second part, we're actually using that formula, not the imposed P, capital P equal to zero. So that's, in a way, the second part is some dreamy part where you think, oh, I might have drugs trickling in because, you know, some factory is making them. And if I had drugs trickling in after I've run out, in that situation, that's how much treatment I would have to do. But it's purely hypothetical. Normally, it should be down to zero. And, in fact, in practice, it's down to zero.
Thank you, Julian. Can I get Saeed to have a couple of comments, please?
Okay. a couple of comments. I mean, results are very interesting in the sense that dropping that treatment rate is the good news and is consistent with previous results that we published, because it says that if you keep the treatment level really high, you're going to develop resistance and probably you're going to have much more death at the end of epidemic. So you have to come up with a strategy that if you cannot contain the disease at the very beginning, then you have to come down in terms of treatment level in order to prevent emergence of resistance in the population. The second thing that you may want to consider, changing objective to minimize or reduce the emergence of resistance is another thing. But also, if you run out of drugs very quickly, if you see the pictures, you run out of drugs maybe day 50 or day 60, which is sort of peak of epidemic or even above peak of epidemic. If you run out of drugs too early, you may want to consider to actually very high treatment level at the very beginning, because resistance generally is less infection than sensitive strain, and therefore the death rate is much lower. So if you expect to run out of drugs very early, you probably hope to develop resistance in order to have lower death. That's another thing that you may want to consider. If you run out of drugs 30 days or 20 days, depending on the stockpile that you have. The other thing is you develop resistance as a result of treatment, and that might take time for resistance to come up in the population. But if we have importation of one resistance to the population, it would change dynamics dramatically. And you have to come up with strategy to handle that part too. Those are my comments.
Yeah, thank you, speaker, one more time. Okay, our third talk will be Manulife.